We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Rippy Writes with Brian Scott Libby.
Transcripts can be obtained by drinking a fifth of bourbon, ramming your head through some drywall, and then writing down every thought you have.
What's up? I am Brian Scott Rippey. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Rippey Writes podcast. We've got a two-podcast Monday for you. First up, we're going to talk to Bracken Ray, former Andy Kennedy staffer, basketball correspondent here on the podcast, about the Chris Beard saga, what it means that Ole Miss retained him from going to Arkansas, what the roster might look like next year, the perception of the program as a whole, and a whole lot more. So I think you'll enjoy this conversation. One, editorial note, we did record this late Sunday afternoon, so this was before the John Calipari to Arkansas news happened, if you're listening to this on a Monday morning. So just bear that in mind. Doesn't really change the pod, but we did not dive into that at all, and I think we pondered how the Arkansas job would shake out. So obviously just a little bit of a time mishap there. So anyway, think you'll enjoy the podcast. Buckle up. Before we get to that, though, I want to take one quick break to remind you. This podcast is brought to you by C Spire. It's time to upgrade your home internet to the best service in the market with C Spire Home Fiber. The past few years have proven how important it is to have a reliable home internet connection for you and your family. That's why C Spire Home provides the most reliable internet service with 99.99% uptime. C Spire also prides themselves in having the best customer service in the home internet market. Their customer service is award-winning, local service based out of the Southeast with industry-low call wait time. C Spire provides 1 gigabit and 300 megabit internet packages to homes across Mississippi, Birmingham, and the Southern Alabama regions. C Spire is also proud to announce the release of their brand new 2 gigabit and 8 gigabit home internet plans. Save yourself the hassle by not waiting for your internet connection to drop with the other guys. Call or go online to cspire.com/home today to use the promo code RIPPEE, R-I-P-P-E-E, at checkout for 1 month of free service. That's right. Just for listening to this podcast, you get 1 month of free service when signing up for C Spire. Check them out. C Spire, customer inspired. This podcast is also brought to you by Skybox Sports Picks. Who is Skybox Sports Picks? Well, glad you asked. They're the world's best gambling handicapping website, the inventors of the Skybox Matrix Interval, an advanced modeling mechanism that has helped propel Skybox to the top of the sports handicapping industry. Hope you capitalize on Skybox's March Madness picks because they rake it in every single year. All you have to do is go online to skyboxsportspicks.com, choose a picks package that fits your price range. You can try it for a day, a week, a month, all sports, sports-centric. I'd recommend just going with the year-long all-access pass. It'll pay for itself and then some, and boom, they send you picks in a color-coded spreadsheet, and you're more equipped to profit than you are going off your own leans. It's all based off math. Math cuts through every single opinion or lean you think you might have. Do it with the professionals. Check them out, skyboxsportspicks.com. Use the promo code RIPPEE, R-I-P-P-E-E, and that'll get you 20% off any purchase. Check them out, skyboxsportspicks.com. Here's Bracken. All right, we now welcome on Rippy Writes basketball correspondent, former Andy Kennedy staffer, Bracken Ray. I'm recording this on a Sunday in which I normally do baseball. I think I'm going to get to Colin at some point on Sunday night, but actually a little bit of relief to be talking about something rather interesting. We were going to do a podcast at some point, kind of recapping the season based on kind of our work, travel schedule, and all of that. And I think I reached out to you on like Wednesday. I was driving back from somewhere for work. It's like, let's do a pod at some point. Like, let's give it like 4 or 5 days. And that was really when the wheels started churning with this whole saga. I don't even really know where to start. Let's just start with the macro. Chris Beard will, in all likelihood, be in Oxford next year. What does that mean for the program, and how significant of an off-the-court win was this week?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, retaining a guy that's as talented as he is against a program that has a lot of basketball history in Arkansas. They've got history. They've got a great fan base. you know, from a perception standpoint, not only for the basketball program, but for the athletic department in general, it's a massive win. You know, for the past two or three weeks, a lot of people nationally have been talking about how this coaching carousel was going to be a little wilder than most years. And it really started with Rob Lanier getting fired at SMU, winning 20 games in the American this year. They fire him, which meant, you know, Enfield went to SMU, Musselman to USC. And then, you know, as we record this podcast right now, Beard and Tang have declined the Arkansas job. There's talk on Will Wade. There's talk on Chris Jans. Whoever takes that job, there's another domino that just, you know, keeps happening. It reminds me of that article, 6 years ago or so, of the Elijah Moore, penalty in the Egg Bowl, and how many different, it was like 480 different coaching staff changes happened because of that. This is maybe not as, you know, dramatic for the reason why, but, you know, this started with Lanier, and going back to Beard, you know, having him year two, I know he was disappointed with year one at Ole Miss, but, you know, at the same time, 20 wins in year one with what they had returning is not a terrible negative as well. So this is a big statement for this basketball program.
Yeah, it is. And the 20 wins, I mean, if you look at Ole Miss's year one in totality, given what Beard inherited and what they came off of the prior two seasons, in a vacuum, it'd be considered a raging success. But of course, the team getting out to the 18-3 start and being ranked and talks of the NCAA tournament extending into the end of January, and then them petering out down the stretch, made it feel a little more disappointing than maybe it should have felt in totality. And now he'll kind of have a full offseason with a little bit of continuity under him to build a roster that I think makes a little more sense than just kind of getting whatever talent you can. But the fact that this, you mentioned the carousel being crazy. In some ways, it felt a little bit delayed, right? And some of that obviously is still like the NCAA tournament going on over the last 2 weeks and guys still playing. And then, I don't know, a little bit of a different, a late kind of spark with the whole Rob Lanier thing getting fired and how all of that played out. Did this feel a little atypical in terms of the coaching carousel? It feels like a lot of times it happens a little bit more in a microwave type setting. A little bit similar to football, maybe not quite as much, but this one felt like delayed and more strung out. I mean, hell, they announced a Beard extension. We can get into that in a second. And then 2 weeks later, like, is when the real action happened, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it felt like it came in two waves. The first wave was kind of the more, you know, traditional, like, hey, you know, Stackhouse getting fired at Vanderbilt. Everybody knew that was going to happen. It was a matter of time. But then this Lanier thing, I mean, winning 20 games in year two, and getting fired, you know, that is a little unorthodox. And I think they did it because they wanted to make a statement as they move to the ACC and hire somebody that they feel is a better fit. We'll see if that turns out to be the, you know, right choice or not. But, you know, you're absolutely right. This kind of wave two domino effect really started a massive carousel change. And honestly, it's probably not going to end for the next 7 to 10 days because of the, you know, downward implications of it.
The way the last 5-6 days played out and Beard staying at Ole Miss was, I think the news on Friday that he was staying was a little bit surprising to me just from the standpoint of how the tea leaves read prior to that. We had talked a little bit earlier in the week on text back and forth about this extension and whether or not it was signed. I have a little bit more to do on that later about whether anything extension-wise, whether it's signed, actually matters, or if this whole industry is just kind of fantasy land. But the way it played out, I was mostly surprised just because with the way it was talked about and the way it was reported both nationally and the Arkansas side, like when you see national guys like Jeff Goodman and John Rothstein report that Beard has, quote, emerged as the top candidate at Arkansas. I mean, how you could copy and paste the tweet that they had about Musselman and he eventually became the head coach. It seemed like everything was trending in that direction. Did you feel the same way? And were you surprised when you heard the news that he was staying?
Yeah. So the question is that he was the front runner and ended up staying.
Yeah. Or just the way the whole thing was reported. I mean, it felt like it was gaining steam, and then you get the whole, he's the top candidate, and that usually you can tell that direction that thing's going. How surprised were you when it actually flipped and he was not going?
Yeah. So, I mean, when that job opened up, everybody kind of knew that he was going to be the guy they go all in on. He can energize the fan base quickly. He's got roots working at Arkansas Little Rock and then also close to some Texas recruiting as well. I will be honest, I was in my head battling, okay, he's only been here 1 year, and I do think that at some point in time he could get a job, even more elite than Arkansas, but sometimes you have to strike while the iron's hot. And so very conflicted on what he was going to do. And I think there are a lot of people that in the coaching industry were hearing different things. There was points and times during the search that some people thought that his exit to Fayetteville was going to come to fruition. So I wasn't going to be shocked either way, but it definitely got super complicated there for a little bit.
What makes Arkansas such a good job? I know they have a, I mean, I'll start with the basics and you kind of fill it in. They have a gigantic arena. They've won a national title. They support it. You kind of got a lame duck football coach from an NIL's perspective that I don't know how keen on their donor base is going to be on giving to football when no one seems to have confidence in the head coach. What makes Arkansas such a great job?
I think the latter point you made, is an important one. It's a basketball school that right now can, at least until November, December, probably get some funds that football used to get. You've got a historic arena, you've got national championships. Outside of Kentucky, I think they have the largest NBA present from a player count standpoint right now. And then the last one that a lot of people talk about in football a lot, but they forget to talk about it in basketball, is you're the only high major in that state. If you think about it, Musselman's gone super aggressive on the transfer portal, but over the past 30, 40 years of that program, they really have, been able to get some solid players in state. Ole Miss at times under Evans and Barnes benefited from it. From Nolan Richardson, picking the top guys out of Arkansas, but then that kind of B level tier, Ole Miss was able to get, and him going nationally as well. So they've got pretty good talent in state, and that job checks a lot of boxes for people. Now, hey, today's day and age, 80% of a program's score, so to speak, is NIL. Honestly. And that's kind of the unknown right now is where are they currently? It is my understanding that Arkansas is nowhere near as organized as Ole Miss is. Shout out to the Grove Collective there. But the scary part is, hey, Northwest Arkansas has big money. If you're going to get an elite candidate, it feels like you could raise that money pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's a weird dynamic with the Arkansas piece of it, whether you're talking about basketball or any sport, is there is a lot of money in Northwest Arkansas, but it's interesting to me that particularly over the last 15 years, it like that's a topic of conversation every time a job opens with Arkansas, whether it be football or basketball. And then it never seems like they get the candidate that they had their eyes on, whether it was Lane Kiffin back in 2019 or this scenario or a couple others in between. It's almost like, yeah, it's there, but like, where is it being spent? Like, well, how willing are they to give it? And it's that part of it is always unclear. But I think you hit the nail on the head with if you're just looking at this situation in totality, how in the world did Ole Miss keep a sitting head coach from going to Arkansas? I think it comes down to the sheer fact that it's a new world that we live in now. Borky and I were talking about this the other night, whether it be football, basketball, whatever, kind of anything prior to 2021 when all of this became legal, is not rendered 100% moot, but you can't view a job or a program remotely similar just because of the 20, 30 years of history prior to that, because the rules of the game were flipped on its head. And I think that's ultimately what this comes down to. There's several other ancillary factors that definitely went into this decision, but I think at the end of the day, it's just the fact that Ole Miss stepped up to the plate NIL-wise. They are organized. Everyone's pulling in the same direction. There's really no confusion on what you have to work with there. And I think that made a huge difference because it doesn't sound like Arkansas was remotely in the same boat. And I'm not even talking about just money figure total. It's just organization and, I guess, transparent commitment to that coach.
I think that's spot on. The value of Grove Collective right now is immeasurable. You know, the other thing that's interesting, I don't think any numbers have been released yet on, you know, what Beard's new contract will be with Ole Miss after this weekend. I would imagine that he's, you know, give or take top 10 nationally in salary after this. So if you think about this, okay, Bianco is somewhere around what, second or third in the country in salary, right? We don't know Corbin's because it's private. Lane, I believe, is ninth. I believe Coach Yo is ninth. And so now Beard comes in, we'll just assume top 10 in the country. Your big four sports, you're paying top 10 salaries in your big four sports. And there is, hey, look, there's trade-offs to that too. And there's implications of if you lose, you got massive buyout. But you have to respect Ole Miss, who outside of baseball is not, you know, in the past, a blue blood in football, men's basketball, women's basketball, but they're paying at a blue blood level right now in these four big sports. So kudos to, you know, the athletic department for being able to make that happen.
Yeah, definitely. It's a major player. And why Ole Miss is where it is athletically across the board, as you just outlined, we had talked a little bit about as Ole Miss faltered down the stretch of the season, Chris Beard, you know, what his long-term future was. This whole Arkansas thing had been brewing for quite a while. I mean, we had talked about it in passing on the podcast a couple of different times, just like, hey, if Arkansas or one of these other jobs comes open, how would Beard be a candidate? And then we talked about kind of the importance of what's the difference between Beard spending 1 year to two. And I kept going back to that when I thought about this over the last several days, where this year one was fun and it proved that he's a good coach that can make an imperfect team work. And that first year where he's kind of just grabbing whatever he can to put a roster together to start the season, certainly pretty good. But it just felt like if he could come back to year two, build an NCAA tournament caliber team, that would raise the profile and the perception of the job, versus if he just left after year one. To me, it felt like Ole Miss was kind of back to square one where they were when Beard got hired, to where you're going to have to go make another Will Wade type splash to continue interest. And your candidate pool for the job in general has not really changed, other than the fact that you got kind of fortunate that two high major coaches that get talent and have won at a high level just happened to be available back to back years because of their, you know, very different but very significant baggage. Did you feel the same way, that him sticking around for a second year would have a dramatic difference on the program than just one?
Yes, absolutely. I think you hit a great point of, hey, if you don't go get Will, if the job opens and you don't go get Will Wade, I would have put a lot of money on Ole Miss being a Wednesday night team in the SEC tournament next year. I mean, a lot of money on it. No matter who the coach was. I just think if you look at it, you know, you'd return like two or three guys. And as we sit here at Sunday, you know, Beard, if he had taken the job on Saturday or Sunday, okay, now you've got 48 hours. Well, now you're that far behind from the transfer portal. And I know that sounds crazy because it's still early April, but every day counts. So having that, you know, hire a new coach to retain the, we'll call it 3 to 4 guys that you want to keep. And then now you're behind the eight ball, because who Ole Miss would have hired likely would have been a low to mid-major assistant. And that's not who they were targeting. They can't afford the type of players that Ole Miss can afford from an NIL standpoint right now. It's definitely revisionist history. I think, in my opinion, my list would have been Will Wade. And I think that Will Wade would have been pretty excited about the opportunity to come back in the SEC. And then number two would have been Bucky for me. And I've been a huge Bucky guy for years. You've heard me talk about it for years. I think he's got a super high ceiling. The one, you know, nitpicky thing is his floor is undefined. And that's the case with every low to mid-major head coach. You know, you don't really know what the floor is. It's just like getting a transfer at the low to mid-major level. You know, they could average 20 a game at their level and come in and average 4 at your level. So that's where that is. But back to your point, I think that the continuity of an Ole Miss basketball coach turning down Arkansas publicly is massive for the program. It's massive. The second piece that may be just as important is the fan buy-in. The fact that we get year two and they saw, you know, the fans saw a pretty drastic turnaround, 20 wins, right? You still didn't make the goal of the tournament, but a lot of improvements there. Now you go get it again this year. You've got a good coach. You've got a good staff. And, you know, one can assume that they're going to bring in a solid transfer portal as well. So I think that's the big piece, too, is this fan base has not seen just a ton of success in modern history when it comes to, you know, being super competitive in March and playing in the NCAA tournament. And so the fan base getting more of a taste of that is going to be massive, because if that happens, you've now proven you can pay elite money at the head coaching and staff salary level. All right, now you've got a fan base that's engaged. You're in a great town, great campus, and your facilities are A to A minus. And you're in the SEC. That's a lot of check marks that are being checked that 20 years ago were not checked for this program. So, you know, Beard being here another year or two, so to speak, it really just, you know, changes the perception of this program.
Yeah, it does. And again, just continued continuity and consistency is only going to continue to work to accomplish that as well, which why I think Ole Miss will reap the benefits of this over the next 360 days. Plus, you know, provided the on-court product continues to stay competitive and they're in the NCAA tournament mix next year, which makes this all the more significant. For year one to year two for Beard, what is the difference? I watched a Rick Pitino press conference. I think it was the press conference where he just absolutely unloaded on how terrible his team was after that loss in early February, yeah, or whatever it was. And then they kind of went on a streak after that. But he talked about how, like, I'm never doing this again. This has been unenjoyable. Like, we just had to go get who we could get when we took this job. We just had to go get pieces, whether they made sense or not. We were behind the eight ball. We just had to go get talent. When Beard is constructing a roster this offseason, what would you say the biggest differences are in his approach and what he'll be able to do last year versus this year?
Yeah, I definitely think, hey, year two now, you're not coming in. It doesn't have to be as quick of a roster flip because you probably, you know some things that are happening already. I think the big piece that I would envision is going to happen is this past year didn't, from a personnel standpoint, look like a Chris Beard team. They didn't guard and get up in people as much as his teams have done in the past, and some of that is just, you know, a lack of talent and athleticism. So I think you'll see him recruit a lot more like 6'6 to 6'8 guys that, you know, can switch and guard five different positions, but also are a little bit more capable from a rebounding standpoint. You know, at times this year, if you're going to have somebody like a Musa Cisse or Sharp in the game, you know, they can't switch on a guard and guard a guard. You need them to be able to give you something offensively and maybe even back to the basket. They obviously did not do that. So I'm very interested to see how this roster is constructed. I think it's going to look a little bit more like some of his Texas Tech teams. You know, Ole Miss is, outside of John Bull, has not brought in a lot of elite high school players. Beard had kind of a combo of high school and transfers going at Texas. So I think, you know, this year, something to look out for is going to be guys that are longer, that can switch one through five, that can rebound. And then, you know, from a combo guard standpoint, I think he's going to recruit guys more aggressively who can create their shot, their own shot, beat people off the dribble, and facilitate as well. Those are the two things that I would look for, you know, over the next couple of weeks as visits get lined up and the aggression on the transfer portal increases.
And as we kind of see the beginning portions of this roster turnover, as of right now, unless I've missed something, Ole Miss has four guys in the portal: Cameron Barnes, Jacob Gazzo, Rashad Marshall, and Malik Ewan.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that's probably the end of the turnover. Where do you think they're at as far as guys who are on the roster this year? I guess the better way to ask, who do you think is back next year?
Yeah, I mean, it would totally, you know, totally be kind of guessing at this point. But you would think that if Brakefield you know, is coming back to college. I think he's a big Ole Miss guy. I would also think they recruit, you know, another four as well. So I don't know if that would limit his minutes or his role, but you think he'd be back, Juju back, you know, Austin Nunez back. And then I really don't know on, you know, on Musa Cisse, like, hey, is like transferring schools the bigger threat, or is like going and playing overseas where there's more money the bigger threat? And then, you know, Brandon Murray as well is a guy that, you know, had some really good years at LSU and Georgetown. And so, hey, does he stay and try to figure it out, or does he go to his fourth school and, you know, essentially 4 years?
Right. And that's
so, I mean, at the end of the day, you think about it, like, I think this staff takes seven or eight guys in the transfer portal. I know that sounds crazy. I think last year they took six. But, yeah, I mean, I think that they go take seven or eight guys in the portal. You have two high school guys coming in. And then, you know, that's the assumption that three or four scholarship players return.
Right. And that the math kind of makes sense on that, where there might not be a ton of exits we see going forward that we don't already know about. Right. Because you've already got the four in the portal that I mentioned. Then you got Sharp, who's gone. He didn't have another year of eligibility. Flanagan did not have another year of eligibility. And then you had Morrell, who is announced he was turning pro and not coming back. So, like, you do have the spots there. You mentioned look like more of a beard team, and you mentioned a lot of like perimeter combo guards, so it get into you defensively. I agree, based on looking at his teams at Texas and Texas Tech, that was certainly not that last year. Is there anyone off top of mind? And I know we'll probably do another podcast in the offseason at some point about portal targets and all of that. But now that you turn the page on whether he'll be here or not, is there anyone that off the top of your head you think they'll target that makes sense in the portal?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Not anybody off the top of my head, so to speak. I thought there was going to be a lot of high majors that were going to try to go after Yaxel Lindenberg, who was the starting four-man for UAB. He announced that he's returning. He's a really good player, and will probably have a chance to be, you know, one of the best players in the American next year. But I think over the next couple days, you'll start to see some things. And the thing is, you know, that nowadays transfer portal players, they're a little bit more mature and experienced. They don't always have to come in on an official visit, but it always, you know, since the beginning of time, has been important to note official visits. That's a, you know, that's a sign of seriousness. And so keeping an eye on, you know, who's coming in the spring on weekends, baseball game, double decker, whatever the case may be, is going to be super important to lock down some of these guys.
We'll get back to bracket in just 1 second, but before we do, I want to take one quick break to remind you. Podcast is also brought to you by LB's University Avenue there in Oxford. Go see Greg for a Rippy Right subscriber. You get a new free newsletter from me and discounted meats right now. 3 6-ounce bacon wrap fillets for $20. That's about a $40 valuation you're getting there for $20. Then go find your own favorites. It's the best butcher shop in the world. All kinds of delicious cuts of meat, sausages, seafood, all kinds of awesome cuts of meat. My personal favorite is the tri-tips. Love the bacon wrap fillet as well. Go find your own favorites at a Crown Jewel of Oxford, a staple of Mississippi. Check them out, LB's University Avenue there in Oxford. This podcast is now brought to you by MC Speech Therapy. Has your child been diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder or another developmental disorder? MC Speech Therapy offers private speech therapy from the comfort of your own home. Other centers may leave you, as the parent, sitting in the waiting room. MC Speech Therapy enables parents to make every moment with their child therapeutic. Using a relationship-based framework, MC Speech Therapy can help your child engage, relate, and communicate. Mary Claire Boudreau's doctorate-level expertise and passion in helping children with communication difficulties offers articulation and language therapy, parent training, is licensed to do virtual therapy across the state of Mississippi. With MC Speech Therapy, you and your family will gain a better understanding of your child while cultivating stronger relationships. For service today, call 903-824-8575 or email her at maryclaire@mcspeechtherapy.net. That is maryclaire@mcspeechtherapy.net.
All right, back to Bracken. I haven't really heard any rumblings about staff turnover. Do you imagine pretty much the same staff comes back intact?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think that, you know, every year there's always going to be one or two. And so, you know, it wouldn't shock me if you have one or two things. But Beard puts together really good staffs. And again, hey, tournament was the goal this year. But overall, his body of work, he's had a lot of success, which means that, you know, ADs are going to want people from the Beard tree. Nothing has opened, you know, to date that I think any of these guys are going to leave for, but you just never know. That that Rob Lanier, you know, domino fell at SMU, you know, it could work its way around to Mississippi State's coaching staff, Alabama's, Ole Miss. You just never know how far that domino is going to stretch.
To kind of put a bow on some of this as far as the situation the last few days, it was weird in the sense we talked about reading the tea leaves and the shock value of the fact that he's coming back. An element of strangest all this too was it was a situation to where there weren't a lot of people who you thought would knew what his like how this was going to go or what the thinking was with any sort of certainty, right? It just felt like this is Chris Beard's decision, and I don't exactly know what his interest is in the Arkansas job and what he'll ultimately do. Did it kind of feel the same way to you? Like this really just comes down to one man. There won't be a ton of agent leaking. There won't be a ton of assistants saying, here's what I think might happen. It was just literally one guy and what he wanted to do and make a decision.
100%. And, you know, his family's in Texas, so he doesn't have that holding him down, you know, like some coaches do. And the thing that I think is interesting is I don't think there are a ton of people who truly know, you know, what was the reason for him staying or if he went leaving, right? Is the salary the driving force? Is the NIL pool the driving force? Is the history and tradition of the program the driving force? I don't really know, you know, what it is. And it's kind of the same with like, you know, it reminds me a little bit of Lane a couple years ago. Is you just really don't know with the guy, and so that's the interesting piece. But Keith and Boyce figured out whatever that motivator was, and you know, year two, here we go.
Yeah, they did, and I think it's a combination of all those things you just listed. But it does sound like Ole Miss had some recent NIL commitment that I think Beard played a pretty large part in securing. That certainly had to help. And that's really the capital that's overarching and more important than anything else, as we outlined earlier. Arkansas job-wise, though, where do you think this goes? Jerome Tang staying at Kansas State. They don't land Beard.
I texted you on Friday. It was like, do you think they'd consider Jans? And you mentioned that Jans would probably make a little more sense at Kansas State if Tang left rather than actually at Arkansas. But then there was a report on Saturday that he interviewed for the job. How shocking is that to you? Is it similar at all to Musselman, where you don't go out there and interview it for it if you're not taking it? What did you make of that news and how you think the search goes for Arkansas?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I don't know. It sounds like that was valid, Jan's interviewing, but I don't know if that's been confirmed, you know, on the back end. My thought is when you hear things so many times, you know, a lot of times there's at least some validity to it. And I've always heard that Mississippi State was not going to be the last stop for Chris Jans. I think that he values the Arkansas job, but right now, you know, as we sit here on Sunday afternoon, there's a lot of talk about both Will Wade and Chris Jans. One would feel McNeese to Arkansas. You probably do that one. You can go stick it back to LSU one or two times a year. And then, you know, for Jans, it's very similar because Ole Miss and State are similar basketball jobs. It's like, hey, you know, is this a big enough leap? Does Chris Jans think that he could get a job better than an Arkansas? Arkansas is probably a top 15 job nationally, and I think it's, you know, a top three or four job in the SEC. But for Jans, you know, Jans doesn't have the national championship appearance and, you know, doing it at multiple high majors. So, you know, for Jans, you have to look in the mirror at some point and go, hey, like, do I think I'm going to get a blue blood at some point? And, you know, if not, Fayetteville may be, you know, maybe the ceiling for me. And he's a ball coach. So that's not a slight at him. As soon as that job opened, you know, a couple of years back, I was pretty nervous because that made a lot of sense as a candidate for them. But he's a ball coach. So he's got to do some reflecting if he gets an offer on what his choice is going to be.
From your time working on staff or just following the sport in general, I tried to think back of like how normal it felt for a coach to go interview for a job and then come back to his previous school. Cause you had the whole Mike Bianco fiasco with LSU and like he came back, but I don't think people were thrilled with that. If you were working, you know, circa 2015 or whatever on AK staff and he went and interviewed for a job in person, would that lead you to believe, oh, he's taking this job, something's up? Would it be jarring at all if he came back? If you were a staffer, how would you feel about that?
Yeah, you'd feel, you know, I get whatever emotion it is. I mean, if it's a really good job, happy if you think you can stay on the staff, but also nervous, whatever the case may be. You honestly, you start thinking selfishly in those times. I mean, it's human nature. What I will say is there's a lot of this that goes on that's back channeled through their agents where the agent's the middleman and there's never really an interview like that. The interview more is, hey, let's talk through, you know, we're doing this thing. Let's talk through numbers. Let's make sure we're aligned on everything. But there's a ton of stuff that goes on, you know, through agents. To where, from a perception standpoint, an interview never happened.
Yeah, just summed it up. That's probably the reason why that happens, right? Because if you have it the other way, where the guy goes to the place to interview and comes back, there, I guess that'd be the second part of it. If AK went and interviewed somewhere, then didn't take the job and came back. I mean, I know you think selfishly as a staff member, but like, do you think there would be any sort of awkwardness amongst the university fan base, administration, whatever?
Can you imagine if that had happened in like, you know, 2016 or 2017 with how like polarizing he was on the positive and negative side? If he like left and came back, that would have been a shit show.
Oh, it would have been Mike Bianco 2021.
Yeah. So no, for sure. It's not very common. The thing that the agents are the ones that are supposed to protect this thing, right? And Musselman, he knew he was out. Juracek knew he was out. Like, he was going there to interview, to stay there, not coming back to Fayetteville. So that it was almost like a formality in the business world, you know, more so to speak. So I think that there's a lot of stuff that back channel happens when it comes to, especially like high major to high major. If you're Will Wade, like, Will and his agent probably, hey, you know, Will, like, if Arkansas opens and you interview, like, okay, their fan base would have to be lunatics to be mad at him for trying to interview, not get it, and come back. He won 30 games this year. So there's a little bit of semantics on the program that you're bouncing from as well.
Yeah, I think that's exactly correct. If it does end up being Jans, and I have no clue what the likelihood be, but we talk about perception being everything. How big of a hit would that be to the perception of Mississippi State's basketball program, which historically has been a better, more successful program than its in-state counterpart?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that most people, if you polled coaches pre-alignment, most would say State's bottom four and Arkansas's top four jobs in the league. And so, you know, the way that here's an example of it. State's a little bit better than this program, but it would be like if who replaced Bohannon, the interim? What's his name?
Oh God, I can't think of the name.
Putting you on the spot here, baseball guy.
I know. I'm on the spot. I can't think of it off the top of my head.
So anyway, if my point here is, if that guy, you know, went to Omaha this year and State or Ole Miss opened up, and he took one of those jobs, as an Alabama fan, you can't like be mad at him for that. And as an Ole Miss or State fan, we'd be like, well, that makes sense. It's similar, right? Like,
yeah,
Ole Miss State. Okay, you also have Arkansas.
Jason Jackson, by the way.
There you go. You also have Arkansas and LSU, but hey, that's these two in-state schools baseball-wise are top four in the SEC, right? Alabama, obviously, bottom four. So, like, if that happens, I mean, that wouldn't surprise anybody. If you're on the outside, if you're a Georgia or, you know, Florida or A&M baseball fan, you'd be like, okay, I mean, that makes sense. So, it's not the exact comparison, but just to give, like, another sport comparison – the bigger thing is, like, it's not that he leaves, it's who you replace him with. You know, I don't know if Mark Keenum or the relatively new AD at State would hire Will Wade. I don't know. I don't know if that's their fit or not. I would do it. I mean, I would have. It would be the first, second, and third call that I made, because you can keep the momentum going, and I think he is – you know, in this NIL and transfer portal era, pretty elite. You know, that would Bucky be on the list, or there's some other mid-majors that would be on the list. But it all comes down to, hey, perception of your coach leaving for Arkansas is one thing. How do you respond to it?
Last thing on this, I talked about the extension, whether it was signed and all of that. And that was a little bit of a discussion while Beard was a candidate there. I learned a decent bit about how that works and maybe doesn't work. Maybe you knew this already. Does this now, with the money being so great and teams, you know, wanting to win and the ante being up, does it feel like the contract piece of all of this when discussed doesn't really matter? This is all just fantasy land monopoly money. Guy's going to leave if he wants to leave. He's going to stay if he wants to stay. No one's locked in by buyouts anymore or whether a contract's inked or not. Do you kind of get the same sense?
Yes, ish. I do get the same sense, because it seems like everything's a little more verbal than written. Yeah, the one thing I will say, and I said this one time, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, on maybe as hand raised guys or maybe with you, I feel like at some point there's going to be a trend where ADs sit on dirt for their coaches to get out of these buyouts. We've seen it a few times. Right. Like we've seen it a few times. Auburn tried to do it with Harsin. But you have to wonder, like, for example, if you're Barnhart at Kentucky and there's something you got on Cal that would be, you know, yes, a four calls to get out of $33 million. I don't care how good of a relationship you have with him. That he's won a national championship, you would do it. So that's the thing. As these contracts keep getting more extreme, I think the gamesmanship's going to get dirtier and more aggressive. So that's kind of my take, is like, okay, right now it's like, hey, is the housing market, is it a buyer's or seller's market? Right now it is a coach's market when it comes to these contracts. They are the ones with the leverage. Like we said, you know, this contract extension that was released in March may have been more verbal than written, so to speak. But if you're an AD, you have to have a backup plan for how you get out of that if performance is not meeting your ROI.
Which is a wild way to think about it, but like the backup plan in almost always is, I don't know if necessarily nefarious is the right phrase, but pretty cutthroat, right? You're going to try to hammer home some sort of baggage or something to get out of the buyout. And most of the time that's going to be pretty messy, which I agree. I think that's going to have to happen at some point for some of these places to continue to hire quality coaches and be sustainable, particularly with the whole revenue model getting different with NIL and all of those things. I think you're exactly right on that. Last couple of things before we get out of here, just some NCAA tournament thoughts. I think this has been a fantastic NCAA tournament. This seemingly went, I guess, somewhat chalk now that you're going to have Purdue and UConn in the national title. What have your thoughts been on the tournament? What did you think of the Final Four yesterday?
Yeah, I think it's been fun. Every year has been fun. Honestly, you've had a good men's and women's NCAA tournament, both Definitely. Very entertaining. DJ Burns, there's always the story in March, right? And, DJ Burns, I mean, that was great while it lasted. How in the world did Ole Miss beat them by 20 or 30 points, earlier in the season? It has been good. And I'll be honest, I didn't see NC State making a run like they did. The thing that's so special about March is, they're playing in the ACC tournament and about to lose to Louisville, and a guy misses a free throw to go up four, and they hit a three to, I believe, go to overtime. And that whole trickle down effect, they ended up winning seven or eight games in a row after that. So I think it's been a March like most years, which is just wild and unpredictable and sporadic. But to your point, really good March. And man, what Hurley's doing at UConn right now, I mean, they're just beating the shit out of everybody. So that's been entertaining of, hey, are we getting to the point where maybe we have a new dynasty, in front of us?
That was my next question, is how the hell he's doing this, because this feels like as dominant of a back-to-back run as you've had since the Billy Donovan days at Florida. Yeah. And those back-to-back in 06, 07 or whatever it was, it can't be just talent. It doesn't mean they have NBA dudes on that team. They're incredibly talented, but are they that much talented than everyone else? How is he doing this?
Yeah, I think I think there's a bigger variance in coaching than there is talent when it comes to UConn. I mean, think about it. You right now could name that Florida team starting five,
yes,
and maybe a guy or two on the bench. You couldn't name me UConn starting five.
No, not in totality, even after watching 40 minutes of their last three games.
Right. And that is, 12 hours ago versus, 16 years ago, or whatever the case may be. So, but he's a ball coach. Obviously his dad is a historic Northeast high school coach. And so I think a lot of his stuff, he runs really good action. They scout really well. I think their bigger upper leg is actually coaching rather than dudes.
I think so too. And that led me to the next question. There's a guy, Eric Fawcett, who I think he's a Canadian basketball coach, but also does some kind of like recruiting writing and Florida yep. basketball writing. I don't really know how I got connected with him. Wasn't he the guy a couple years ago that said you look like Justin Timberlake? Is this the same dude?
Yes, that's correct. He I think he was maybe unofficially Florida's basketball beat writer when worked for the team.
Okay, that makes sense. And I still think he does some sort of affiliation with Florida basketball. He has a great Twitter account where he clips a lot of the sets that these teams run, and he does it like daily in the NCAA tournament. And he's clipped a lot of UConn's. And you mentioned the coaching piece of it. The sets that they run, and I was noticing it particularly over the last two rounds, it's not like exactly like football, because obviously you have transition possessions that like to get out and run, but it seems like a lot of the time if they have a half court possession, he's calling some sort of variation of different sets that they run. And it's remarkable to watch once a guy like that was able to clip some of it and like map it out for like a dumb brain like me watching on TV. They run very intricate sets and they're constantly moving. He has dudes screening, yep. re-screening, and that really takes a toll on defenses. When it's like the Golden State Warriors, Steph never stops running around. And when you're having to chase people and run through screens and run through contact, that wears defenses down or wears opponents down a lot. I guess my question is, if that's how what works, why is everybody not trying to do some version?
Here's the thing on that, and this past year is a bad example because it wasn't great, but it kind of reminds me of how Beard's teams in the past have switched ball screens and ice ball screens. That whole deal comes down to getting players to buy into it. When you're running super, you know, robust and intricate sets like that, and then, you know, if you're a beer defensively switching everything, you know, all of that comes down to buy-in. There are high school coaches who can draw up action like Hurley does, but, you know, but you have to get your players to buy into it. That's the biggest thing. And so, hey, there's all this cliche talk about culture and that kind of stuff, but that from an X's and O's standpoint, there's a lot of really good and really bad play callers. You know, in college basketball, my example of it is Mike Anderson, who's had a decent career. He went to the NCAA tournament 3 times with Arkansas. We played them 1 year and he ran 2 plays the whole game. Two. So there's a wide, just, you know, array of that. But on both ends of the court and then special teams, which is your baseline out of bounds and your sideline out of bounds plays, a lot of that comes into buy-in. Hey, when you're setting these down screens or ball screens, making sure your feet are set, you know, before your guard comes off the screen, you know, even elementary, junior high level things like that is a lot harder to get buy-in from than you would think with a lot of these 18 to 22 year old guys. And now you have NIL as a factor, and holy shit, if I take them out of the game for doing a moving ball screen, are they going to transfer tomorrow? Like, that's the deal to it. It's buy-in.
I think it's a perfect answer. And it's almost like an American basketball culture buy-in. Like Russillo always made that point with the Warriors. Not everyone obviously could have been what the Warriors were, but you see Steph and Clay running around and nonstop movement versus like James Harden dribbling the air out of the basketball and taking a shot, where like Russillo is always like, I can't believe out of the 31 teams or, you know, 50 top scorers in the league, where like no one's like, hey, look what they're doing. Let's actually do the opposite. I don't want to do that because it's like not as cool, I guess. And like, yep, in Europe, like European guys are kicking the NBA by storm, like kicking the American guys' ass, because they all get taught how to play within a system. I watched a clip with Franz Wagner recently where he was like, I don't think I scored more than 25 points in a game till I got to Michigan, because in Europe, we were just taught to be playing together and part of a system. Like, part of it is a culture thing too. And I guess that's what Hurley's gotten down, is that he's gotten talented guys to buy into it versus what's best for the individual.
That's right. That's right. And that, at the end of the day, is what a lot of it comes down to, and it is a lot harder to do than it is to speak about.
Particularly when you can have a dude who's like, no, I don't want to do this, so I'll just leave again. So it's a fascinating observation, because how it works. And, you know, there's a different version of it, not as extreme, but like Purdue does some of that. I know they hate the Edie style, but I watched a video the other day of the Baker kid who used to play at Rutgers. He tweeted something where he said, it was a clip of a set that Purdue ran, and he tweeted, I remember back when I was playing, when one of the assistants was still on staff at Purdue, he'd hold it up on the whiteboard, I'd call it out, and the assistant just looked at him and goes, don't act like you know what this shit is, because there's so many sets and you can't keep track of it. And like, it's just funny to me how the most successful teams are doing something that not everybody else is to get people to buy into. But I just thought that was a funny note, where he's like,
yeah,
and very confidently calling it out, and the assistant's like, you don't know what this is.
The interesting thing to see, and you don't necessarily like have to know what teams are running, so to speak, but if you look for it and look at body language on the staffs, your teams whose locker room is bad and culture is bad, one thing offensively you'll see is players breaking the play and just going and doing whatever the fuck they want to.
Right.
A lot of times it'll be like, you know, a 6'7" guard who's got a 6'3" guard defending him, and he decides that he just wants to go post up on the low block, and it makes no sense for, you know, the set. You don't even have to have like robust basketball knowledge. You can pick up on it sometimes. Arkansas is an example of that this year. That's the opposite of the Hurley example.
You think UConn's got? Do you think Purdue's got a shot tomorrow night?
I do think they have a shot. You know, Edie would have to, you know, have the game of the century. But no, I think UConn gets this thing done back to back.
What do you make of Edie? It's been very polarizing. I imagine you've probably tried not to vomit at some of the discourse around what it is and what it isn't. What do you think of him as a player?
I mean, great college player. I don't think that he moves well enough at the next level with, you know, how they have to guard different action. Obviously, there's just so much talk about like the officiating piece. And where I will defend a little bit is like, it's got to be so hard to figure out how you officiate for and against Edie. I do think one thing that is never gets called, and you're like super common sports dad at a middle school game is always going to yell it out, is like he 3 seconds.
Yeah.
He sits in the lane a ton and never gets called on it. But that is like 3 seconds gets called like every 10th game. You know, that's just not something that it gets called a whole lot, whether it's, you know, whether that's right or wrong. That's the one for me that I notice just as much as the foul discrepancy.
He is Bracken Ray, former Andy Kennedy staffer, Rippy Wright's basketball correspondent. I appreciate the time as always, dude. It was another fun year. Hopefully have an NCAA tournament to talk about next year. We'll check in at some point this offseason, but another great season, dude. I appreciate your time as always.
Absolutely.
All right, that's going to do it for our show today. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Again, right after this podcast is recorded, if you'll go up in the feed, we have our normal SEC baseball conversation with Colin Brister. So be sure to check that one out as well, as we got two pods out for you on a Monday. Hope you have a wonderful start to your week, and we will talk to Weldon at some point this week, and then an update on the documentary that a buddy of ours from New York shot this past fall, Jake Sarachek. You might remember him. He was on the pod last fall. Update on where that stands and a premiere that's going to be happening in Oxford this week. So stay tuned to the pod for more details on that. We'll talk to you here in a couple of days.